dark with storms, and burdens weigh my heart. Though troubles wait at every turn, I know I can go on. When sorrow heals my soul and burdens make me strong, though trouble waits at every turn, I know I can go on. My sister in my heart, my brother in my song, though troubles wait at every turn, I know I can go on. And though the journey is long, the destination is near, though troubles wait at every turn, I know I can go on. So brother, take my hand, and sister, sing my song. When hope awaits at every turn, I know we will go on.
The past few weeks remind us, those words of the song, that life is full of struggle and that life takes unexpected turns. We all have our burdens, and there are indeed dark times, times of sorrow and times of struggle. It's here in this beloved community that we covenant to be there for each other and for those beyond our walls in these times. Here that we're reminded that hope awaits at every turn, that our burdens can make us strong, and that indeed we can go on. As Rick Gentleman comes forward to light our chalice, I invite you to open to the chalice lighting words in your order of service, and we'll recite them together in unison. When evil darkens our world, give us light. When despair numbs our hearts, give us hope. When nothing seems sure, give us trust. When we lose our way, be our light and our guide. I hope all of our younger folks and some of our older children, shall we say, have one of these. Who can tell me what this is? Can you tell me what it is? What is this? Do you know? Anyone tell me? Can someone tell me what it is? It's a maze. Isn't that amazing, huh? Bad pun. Now, sometimes life is like a maze, but I want to take a look at this because there's lessons in here. And this particular maze talks about someone who might be new and the challenges they might face in getting connected. You see there's a chalice in the middle and a bunch of people happy around it, and a new person who's just coming in, and what obstacles they might run into before they can really connect with everyone who's here. So it's a good thing to think about. First question I want to ask you, you know, if what's the shortest distance from this guy over to the middle? Can anyone tell me? Just a straight line right across. But can you do that in a maze? No. You have to do it. I think I solved it. You have to do it like that. Did you get it too? Did you guys solve it? Did it come out that way? Maybe there's more than one root. I don't know. Is that it? Okay. Well, you see, if you take that root, you keep hitting dead ends. You sometimes have to back up. You sometimes have to keep looking for which way is the way that'll lead you through. Well, I'm going to talk with the adults about that in the sermon later, but can you think, going back to this example here, what might be some dead ends or walls or difficult spots that someone who was coming to the church and wanting to connect with everybody might run into? We hit one this morning, actually. We had the wrong time. The service was at 11, and some people came at 10 because, unbeknownst to me, since we took down part of our sign out front says 10 o'clock instead of 9 and 11. So that would be one of those barriers for someone coming new. Anybody else? Can any of the kids think of something that might, if you were a kid coming new, what might make it, you know, something you'd bump into in the maze? Allie? Somebody back here? I'm looking. Oh, way up there. Could be worried about money, yeah. I guess they could wonder how much it would cost. This church is open to everybody, and it doesn't cost anything. We appreciate your generosity. But people could think about that because some religious institutions require you to pay a certain amount to be members, so that could people could perceive that as an obstacle. Anybody else? Not knowing anybody. Being kind of afraid to, you know, connect with people, to say hello. Maybe people, maybe the other way around, maybe coming and people not talking to you or not speaking with you. Allie? Worrying about being overcommitted, afraid that you're going to, if you become part of the church, you'll have to do too many things? Yeah? No, nobody feels that way, right? Anyway, well, the story is about a maze, and a lot of things in life are a maze. We don't often move in straight lines anywhere. And coming into a church is the same way. So I'm going to, with that message, say take your maze with you. If you haven't solved it yet, take it home and solve it. It's a good thing for discussion. I always like, how many like to do mazes? Yeah, me too. Yeah, great. So feel free to take one home. And when you do, think about the meaning of a maze in lots of contexts. Okay?
Comfort me, comfort me, O my soul. Comfort me, comfort me, comfort me, O my soul. Sing with me, sing with me, O my soul. Sing with me, sing with me, sing with me, O my soul. Speak for me. Speak for me, speak for me, O my soul. Speak for me, speak for me, speak for me, O my soul. my soul. Dance with me, dance with me, dance with me, oh my soul. Dance with me, dance with me, dance with me, oh my soul. Comfort me, comfort me, comfort me, oh my soul. Comfort me, comfort me, comfort me, oh my
soul. Diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could, where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other as just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim, because it was grassy and wanted wear, though as for that the passing there had worn them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay in leaves no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day, yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. Telling this with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence, two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference.
In the book of Numbers, one of the five books of the Torah, there's a sequence of travels of the Israelites from Egypt to the Promised Land. It's told out in stages. They traveled in stages not knowing where they were going, often led by a mysterious cloud that zigzagged through the desert and the wilderness to reach that land. This is not a book that's often read from, and for several reasons. It has lots of long lists, and also has lots of words that are hard to pronounce. But I wanted to give you just a flavor of it, because it relates to what I have to say today. And so just a bit of the flavor. Numbers 33. There were stages by which Israel went out of the land of Egypt. Moses wrote down their starting points stage by stage, and these are the stages according to their starting places. They set out from Ramesses in the first month and camped at Succoth. They set out from Succoth and camped at Etham, which was on the edge of the wilderness. They set out at Etham and then turned back to Pi Hahiroth, passed through the sea into the wilderness, went a three-day journey into the wilderness of Etham and camped at Marah. Then they set out at Marah and came to Elim. At Elim, there were 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees, and they camped there. Then they set out from Elim and camped by the Red Sea in the wilderness of Sin. They set out from the wilderness of Sin and camped at Dophka. They set out from Dophka and camped at Alush. They set out from Alush and camped at Rephidim, where there was no water for the people to drink. Well, this litany of places continues and continues in a zigzag journey for several more paragraphs. And finally, after a convoluted course, they arrive by the river Jordan on the plains of Moab. And the Lord says to Moses, "Tell the Israelites that when you cross over the river Jordan into the land of Canaan, you shall take possession of the land and settle there." And I have a second reading for you today, which is from one of my favorite books. If you haven't read it, I commend it to you. It's Jaber Crow by Wendell Berry. If you could do it, I suppose it would be a good idea to live your life in a straight line, starting, say, in the dark wood of error and proceeding by logical steps through hell, purgatory, and into heaven. Or you could take the King's Highway past appropriately named dungeons, toils, and snares, and finally cross the river of death and enter the celestial city. But that's not been the way I've done it so far. I am a pilgrim, but my pilgrimage has been wandering and unmarked. Often, what has looked like a straight line to me has been a circle or doubling back. I've been in the dark wood of error any number of times. I've known something of hell, purgatory, and heaven, but not always in that order. The names of many snares and dangers have been made known to me, but I've seen them only in looking back. Often I've not known where I was going until I was already there. I have had my share of desires and goals, but my life has come to me, or I've gone to it, mainly by way of mistakes and surprises. Often I have received better than I have deserved. Often my fairest hopes have rested on bad mistakes. And I am an ignorant pilgrim crossing a dark valley. And yet, for a long time, looking back, I have been unable to shake off the feeling that I've been led. Make of that what you will. When we were proofreading the order of service in staff meeting this week, Mike found a typo that had made it through spell check. The sermon title read, "Negotiating the Maize," M-A-I-Z-E, as in corn, instead of "Negotiating the Maize," M-A-Z-E. But you know what? That could just as well have been the right title for this sermon, because the story I want to share with you is one about negotiating a corn maze. That's a cornfield in which is cut an elaborate maize pattern. I shared part of this story before a long time ago, but it was about 8 years ago. Our five nephews, then ages 7 through 10, along with their family members, visited us at our lake cottage in Ashburnham for a week. And one day, Malcolm and I took two of the boys, then 7-year-old twins George and William, to a corn maze not far from here in Stirling. I thought it would be fun for the boys to experience it, and that we too would get some pleasure by treating them to this fun. And besides, after having all of them together at the lake for 4 days at that point, it was time to split them up. When we arrived at the farm, church was about the farthest thing from my mind, just keeping track of 2 7-year-olds. But as soon as we entered the maze, I knew I was experiencing one of those preachable events. I have to tell you, this maze was more than I had expected. As I viewed the orientation video, I learned that there were about 8 miles of pathways through the many acres and acres of corn. And even if you made all the right turns, it was a journey of about 3 miles in order to get through the maze. There were also several rules posted. There was a $1,000 fine if you tried to get out by damaging the corn and cutting your way through the walls of the maze. And there was a sign that read, "Children must stay with adults at all times." Well, off we went. To my amazement, George actually held my hand as we walked into the maze and through almost the entire journey. And as we entered the maze, I was a bit surprised. Somehow I thought that this would be a real challenge for children, but thought that adults might be able to see over or through the corn at times in order to get a sense of the right course to take. Not a chance. The walls of corn stalks were way above my head and several feet thick and densely planted. There was something both exciting and intimidating about entering the corn. We were embarking on a journey where very soon we would not know where we were. It took a bit of courage. We knew we'd have to discover the right path on our own. And as we zigged and zagged through the maze, we were constantly faced with a decision as to which path to take. As Robert Frost's words, sung beautifully by Mike this morning, tell us, the path chosen can make all the difference. And like the Israelites in their search for the promised land, we moved from point to point in the maze, not knowing how long our journey would be. Many times we would come to a dead end and have to retrace our steps. Yet through the journey, we kept moving forward in spite of disappointment and uncertainty. For a 7-year-old especially, it took a certain kind of faith and focus to keep going. At one point, I could tell that George was a bit nervous. Just then, a helicopter passed overhead, and he breathed a big sigh of relief. He informed me that the helicopter was there to rescue us should we become hopelessly lost in the maze. The statement was delivered by him as if it were a profound pronouncement of faith. And it was. If we were hopelessly lost, there was something greater than us that we could rely on. Now, as you may well have guessed, the helicopter was not there to rescue anyone. Helicopter rides over the maze were another source of income for this farm. But for George, its presence put him at ease. There was a greater and more powerful authority watching over us. The helicopter was God for George at that moment, and that gave him the courage to move deeper into the maze. Most of the time, George was leading me, and occasionally we'd stop to analyze our options. There was no logical reason for the path to choose, and we could see no further than just a few yards ahead And often, very often, our decision was wrong. Yet each time we felt a sense that we were sort of being led. You might say that we were led in the same way that Wendell Berry expressed it in the reading, or in the same way the Israelites were led by the cloud. Perhaps you've known the feeling of being led, not on a straight path to the perfect destination, but through a seemingly endless maze of events in your own life. I still can't believe that George actually held my hand for nearly 2 hours. He didn't do it just because it was the rule, but because support of another person was important to maintain the courage and faith necessary for a seven-year-old to negotiate the maze. The presence of fellow travelers on the journey is critical. What we affirm each week in our covenant is that we will be here for each other and walk with you through your maze. It was clear to me that for George, it was both the human support and the sense of support from something greater, just in case things got really bad, that prevented him from losing faith and giving up the journey. And so it is for me as well. As I encountered the obstacles of living life or trying to live life in a straight line, as I've backtracked or taken long detours, faith in others and faith in a God force, in a power greater than me, which somehow was leading me in the right direction, has saved me from despair. We've all been dealt obstacles and setbacks, blocks in the maze, things that don't seem like they should be in the grand plan. But most of the time, most of us are able to move through these times, around them, and even learn from the experience. Like Jaber Crow, I think we have had our hells and our purgatories and our heavens in no particular sequence, and we have really only known where we were by looking back at where we have been. Yet most of the time, we keep moving. And that seems to me to be what is at the very heart of faith. Trusting our steps. Trusting the star of truth. Even when we don't know where those steps will lead. Even when we've been wrong before. Even when we've wasted so much time going down the wrong paths. In that cornfield, there were things that helped us on the journey besides faith. First was recognition of progress. We had a card, and when we reached particular milestones, we were able to put a star or other symbol on our card. I remember George's excitement when we reached the first stamping location. Somehow the maze became less overwhelming because there were destinations along the way to mark our progress. There were, in more adult terms, interim goals, if you will. In the reading from the book of Numbers, the 40-year journey of the Hebrews from Egypt to the Promised Land was certainly not a straight line, but went via a maze of villages, deserts, and wilderness. These were markers along the way that encouraged them to move on to the next. Each Sunday, I speak about the milestones of our lives when I invite you to share joys and sorrows. The word milestone suggests a marker of distance. What we do in religious community is to share the significant landmarks, if you will, of our life. Some happy, some sad, but all actually locations along the zigzag path that is our life. George and I went down many wrong paths, but each one taught us the way not to go. We learned from our experience. This seems so obvious. Yet it is so easy to say, but not as easy to do. Sometimes it's easier to ignore our failures rather than learn from them. And when we do not learn from our failures, we are sure to repeat them again. In the course of the maze in that Sterling cornfield, there were also 11 bridges. These were points where you climbed upstairs onto a wooden walkway which took you over part of the maze. It was amazing when we would come up from out of the maze onto the bridge. We would be thinking that we'd made a lot of progress, perhaps, or that we made little progress in reaching the end. However, it seemed that what we thought while we were down in the maze never really conformed to the reality which we could see from being above on the bridge. Being on a bridge gave us the opportunity to pause and get a new perspective on things. What a difference, taking time to step out of the chaos and gain some new perspective can make in our lives. Taking a break, getting off the treadmill, and examining where we have been and where we are going is profoundly important in our lives. Many times I've been with folks who were seriously ill and who, for as long as they could remember, just kept going. They'd given little thought to the course or the landmarks and had never allowed themselves the time to step back and really assess where they were going. And for many, there was a yearning for what might have been. When you're in the midst of your career, often the pressure just to keep producing is so great that there's no time to reflect. It took me years when I was practicing law, case after case, trial after trial, to allow myself the opportunity to step back and gain new perspective. If I'd not done so, I'm sure I would still be doing that and never have made the career change to ministry. Well, George and I and Malcolm and William made it out of the maze, just about at the point when the boys were really beginning to tire of the exercise. Remember, they were only 7 at the time. They were elated to get the little prize at the end you got for completing it. And it was a lot of fun, and I hope by theologically dissecting the experience, I haven't spoiled it for you. And I also hope that George and William won't feel used when I tell them about this sermon. Actually, I know what will happen. William will be angry because George got all the attention in the sermon, but the more I think about negotiating our way through the corn maze, the more it seems like a powerful metaphor from which we can draw guidance for living our lives. These are the life rules that the maze presented to me. First, it takes courage and faith to move forward through the journey. We never know what lies ahead, and many paths present themselves. It's impossible to make a purely rational decision. It is something else beyond rational decision-making that leads us forward. I call that power, the Spirit, or God. You may describe it differently, but it is the guiding force of whatever you consider to be of ultimate importance. Second, don't try to negotiate life's maze alone. The support of others is necessary. For some, that will be family. For others, close friends. For others, the church community. We all need folks to walk with us, and in turn, we need to walk with them. No person's an island. No person can truly go this way alone. Third, recognize and honor the milestones of your life. Celebrate the joys and grieve the losses. Don't try to speed up the process. It just doesn't work. Fourth, welcome what experience has to teach you. I have always learned more about myself and about the direction in which I need to proceed from my failures than from my successes. As painful as they can be, they're also probably our greatest teachers. And last, climb up on those bridges where you gain some perspective. Stop and rest a bit. Look back and look ahead. It's only when we take the time to step back and gain perspective that we see where we need to change course. Sometimes we find that we're at a dead end and need to backtrack and take the other path. Take time, often, to reflect on your life. In the words of Socrates, an unexamined life is not worth living. It seems to me that if we're faithful to the rules of the maze, the journey of life will be more than just a chaotic series of events. It'll be a higher journey, a journey of meaning, a journey that can lead us to spiritual fulfillment, to renewal of the spirit, even to profound transformation. Like the Israelites who traveled through a 40-year maze, like Wendell Berry's character Jaber Crow, we too know it's often not an easy journey. It won't always make rational sense, and at times it will feel unfair, and at other times we will know that we got more than we deserve. So often we won't even know where we're going until we've been there. As followers of this liberal religious tradition, which follows in the footsteps of the Enlightenment, we often think that we can plan and live our lives in a straight line of progress. I don't know anyone who's done it yet. If it were possible, I don't think we would experience the richness of meaning that we discover in negotiating the maze. In the words of Unitarian minister Ralph Waldo Emerson, the voyage of the best ship is a zigzag line of 100 tacks. That's our journey.
Words of Wayne Aronson. Take courage, friend. The way is often hard. The path is never clear. And the stakes are very high. Take courage, for deep down there is another truth. You are not alone.